And now, the best of Pete Price. The best of Pete Price. On Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
We're talking now to Penelope Gibbs, who's the director of the Out of Trouble campaign. Penelope, first of all, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
What is the Out of Trouble campaign?
It's a campaign run by the Prison Reform Trust, which is aiming to reduce the number of children, and here we're talking about 10 upwards, and young people who are imprisoned in the UK. And we think that there are too many imprisoned because prison is ineffective for young people, particularly under 18-year-olds, and also because we feel it's too harsh a punishment in many cases.
Right. Now, I hear you saying that, but the people out there that are listening to the programme now who are victims would never agree with you on that. They want children and young people to be punished if they do a crime.
It's whether imprisonment is the right punishment and the most effective punishment. And we've actually done lots of surveys of victims, and in fact, they're not as punitive as you might think. What they want is for the person who has done the crime to go through a process whereby they're less likely to create that harm again. So what we're talking about is stuff that works. And the problem about imprisonment is that of the under 18-year-olds who go to prison, over 70% are reconvicted within a year of leaving. So that means they create more victims, and that's worse than the results from anything in terms of punishments within the community. So there's plenty of alternatives which involve some degree of punishment. But really, I think the key thing about victims is what they really want is for that person to make amends for what they've done. And that's why we're really big supporters of something called restorative justice.
Which works how?
The principle of restorative justice is that some facilitator, somebody in the community or somebody else, organises for the victim to meet with the perpetrator of the crime. And in that meeting, the person organising the meeting gets the perpetrator to listen to the victim describing the immense impact, negative impact, harm that that crime has caused. So the burglary, not just kind of the financial impact, but also the what is often a huge emotional impact in terms of things being missing, or, you know, assault. That's, you know, any kind of violent crime is going to have a huge impact. So it allows the victim to talk about and get it off their chest, to be honest. I know it's just words, but actually for victims it means quite a lot. And then the perpetrator doesn't just have to say sorry, they also have to agree to make amends in some way. And then the victim and the person who did the crime make an agreement together about what the criminal is going to do to make up for what they've done. And sometimes that's financial compensation, sometimes it's work in the community, sometimes actually all the victim wants is for that person to get the help they need, maybe with, you know, drugs problem or something, which is going to mean they don't do it again. So it's an agreement made together. And actually all the evidence is that that way of dealing with crime leaves victims much, much happier. I'm not saying they're happy because they're subject to a crime, but they're happier with that than with almost any other way of dealing with crime.
We've had a couple of listeners over the years that went down, their children were naughty, they went down to the police station, said, will you lock them up in the cell for a couple of hours? And they reckon that worked. They reckon that frightened them so much that that stopped them. What's your thoughts on that?
Maybe it did, maybe it didn't in those particular cases. But, you know, I hate to talk about overall evidence, but the overall evidence is that imprisonment, even for just a very short time, doesn't actually work. I think a very, I think that a policeman having a very straight and serious conversation with a child can have a very good effect. And sometimes it's that shock that is all they need. I don't think locking them in a room, and equally as parents, we know that locking a child in a room isn't normally something which helps them behave better. Actually getting them to see that they had choices, that the choice they made had, you know, a bad effect, whatever that is. Even time out on a step is okay. But, you know, locking somebody up in a room has never been found to be very effective.
I'm talking to Penelope Gibbs, who's the director of Out of Trouble campaign. It's interesting that we're doing this programme right now, Penelope, because all you say, I take on board, but this new violence that we're seeing in Ireland, recreational violence, they're calling it, that's the title they've given them, is a group of people as young as 10 fighting with the most violent, vile attitude where they want to kill police. How is what you're saying going to work with them?
I was equally horrified to hear about the riot and at the age of some of the children involved in it. It is not behaviour that I would ever like to hear about again. But I still come back to locking those children up is not the answer. They need to be able to understand what the police felt on being attacked. The woman who had the concrete, you know, dropped on her head, that is a terrible crime. They need, in whatever way, to get to understand the impact of what they're doing, because I don't believe that they've really understood it. And after being made to understand the very, very severe impact of what they're doing, they need to make some kind of reparation. In this case, they caused lots of damage to individuals and to property, and they need to do something about that. And that will go some of the way. But equally, I'm with those people who say, where were the parents? These were quite young children out unsupervised by their parents. So we also need to look at who the parents are, work out why they weren't supervising their children and help them to do so.
What do you say to any of my listeners that would say, but you're one of these do-gooders that's not living in the real world?
They can say that, but in the end, I want a safer society, and I just simply know that prison is a university of crime, and for that reason makes things worse, not better, a lot of the time. It needs to be there for the truly dangerous young people, but there aren't that many of those.
What would you say then to Denise Bulger, who is listening to this programme, who listens to this programme regularly? I know we can't talk about the case because there's a case pending now, but what would your principles say to a mother who lost her child in the most horrific murder, one of the worst murders in the world?
It was absolutely horrific crime, and my heart goes out to her. But to me, they were too young to go through a formal trial process. It didn't make the ultimate outcome any better.
I believe 30 children have died in custody since 1990. Is this desperation on the children's part?
There's a lot of mental health problems amongst children in custody. I mean, you can imagine, you know, you're one moment you're in a courtroom, the next moment you're somewhere hundreds of miles away, away from your community, away from your family. These are frequently very vulnerable children who've lived in difficult homes, shall we say, or in care. And they get to somewhere surrounded by strangers with a lot of, I wouldn't say physical bullying, but there's definitely a lot of mental health, you know, there's a lot of emotional bullying going on because these people are in a alien, hostile environment, and that's the kind of thing children do in those circumstances. So, you know, I don't think that children with, you know, I don't think children with severe mental health problems should be imprisoned. Again, they need mental health care, but prison is not the right place.
Do you, after saying what you've said, do you think that the parents have got a lot to answer for the people who are in trouble?
Well, can I say many of them have already been taken away from their parents and are being looked after by the state. So they are children in care. There's a high proportion of children in care. And then we have to say, what are we doing what is the state doing to look after these children, that they're getting into such serious trouble? Equally, it's about saying what do the parents need to help them be better parents? Because they are struggling, they're not in many cases succeeding very well, and you have to look at whatever it takes to get them to parent better. But there's some really good programs out there which, are looking at kind of parenting training, or, almost having a substitute nanny in the house the whole time. There is lots of very intensive help that is available, but the important thing is to identify the families and the parents who really need it, and to encourage them a lot to take the help available.
One of the statements in your campaign is, for most young people, out of trouble means keep them out of prison. With your help, we can secure change for children and young people in trouble. Do you not believe, or do you not think, that more and more young people are getting in trouble now than ever before?
Statistics. Actually, if you look at the number of under 18-year-olds who've been convicted of a crime, those numbers are going down quite steeply and have been doing so for a couple of years. So that evidence seems to suggest it's not the case. There may be other evidence which goes the other way, but, as I say, it's not clear-cut.
Why was Out of Trouble formed?
Because the Prison Reform Trust really wanted to change the system, change hearts and minds, and get fewer children and young people imprisoned. We just believe it's both wrong and ineffective.
We have one of the biggest local radio late-night phone-ins in this country. Many, many, many people will be listening to this programme tonight who will disagree with you totally because of the trouble they have with young people. What would you say to them? They are sitting there now. They're being bullied, hounded, robbed, beaten up, having major problems with young people, gangs of thugs, feral children walking around, and they will not agree with you. What's your message to them?
Can I say, I absolutely sympathise with people who are the victims of crime, particularly antisocial behaviour, again and again and again. But we need to look for an answer which is going to stop that in the long term. And even the police, most of them will agree that a short spell in prison is not the answer. And a series of short spells in prison probably ends up with just a longer spell in prison. We need to look at what works to try and prevent these crimes happening and to get the young people to realise that it's not something, that they shouldn't become career criminals. And that's what's going to benefit us all.
So we've got a 15-year-old boy persistently robbing houses. He's been caught. What would you do, Penny?
Well, I mean, he's been arrested by the police. He goes to court. I would go for the restorative justice one. If it hasn't been tried before, I think he has to meet one or more of those people he's burgled.
So what do we do? Have him locked up while he does this or what?
Well, I would say no, because I think he'll just learn more ways of burgling, actually. But
so would you have him in his own home?
If his parents are supportive or can be, helped to support him, I would leave him in his own home. But I also think he needs to go to school, and a lot of these children are not in school. So the local authority needs to make sure not only is he in school, but that he has something useful to do after school as well. So I'm talking about a high level of supervision practically all day, and somebody organising one of these meetings with a victim or more victims, and then a plan to get him or her to make amends.
But Penelope, aren't you sending out a signal to them saying, you can do exactly what you want because you're going to get a rap on the knuckles, end of story, that's it?
Most teenagers don't like being supervised. So we're talking about a high level of supervision here. They want independence. So that's already a punishment. Secondly, restorative justice, this meeting the victim, that is the hardest thing they could do. Prison is not a deterrent. There are so many teenagers who just go to prison, come in, come out, and then go back again. It doesn't deter them because it doesn't really just get them to understand that actually committing crime is not the right thing to do. The hardest thing is for them to face their victim and to say sorry.
I've been in prison, not for a crime, but I did a program called Lockdown and spent time in prison. To me, what would scare me if I was a young person is the fact that I would be beaten up, that I could be raped, that I could be attacked, and that would be enough deterrent for me to stay out of prison. Does that not work at all?
No. The ones who go in, I mean, they may be a little bit afraid before they go in the first time, but, you know, what is evident is once they've been in a first time, there's not a deterrent effect. There is a sentence which involves them going in for 2 months and then coming out into the community for 2 months. Lots and lots of teenagers commit another crime in that 2 months that they come out, knowing that that's just going to send them straight back in again, and they still do it. It is not a deterrent. It may be a slight deterrent before the first thing, but can I just say, they do not get raped. Under 18-year-olds do not get raped in prison. They are not that bad. You know, there are very caring staff in these prisons. It's the fact that you're locked up in this institution away from the rest of your community that is the terrible punishment, and hardly see your friends and family. That's the punishment. There are some, there is some use of kind of what they call restraint techniques and so on, but we're not talking about very violent places. I wouldn't say that.
You really believe that people don't get raped and beaten up and bullied and abused in prison?
I think they get bullied, and I think that they get what's called restrained sometimes, and there are some fights, but in under 18-year-old youth offender institutions or other places where they're imprisoned, there's a fantastic staff most of the time, and I think there are some problems, but it really isn't like being in an adult prison.
If anybody wants to support what you believe in and the Out of Trouble campaign, what can they do to help?
I would say go on the website outoftrouble.org.uk and please sign up to support us.
And what do you want at the end of this campaign?
Fewer children and young people in prison. I want fewer children and young people in prison, and I also want those who commit crime to really go through an effective treatment process, whatever you want to call it, so that they're much less likely to commit crime again.
Penelope Gibbs, Director of Out of Trouble Campaign, thank you very much for joining us.
The best of Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Hello, Helen.
Hello, Pete.
Hiya.
Hi, I've just been listening. I'm very rare I can stay up this late because of work, listening to Penelope Gibbs.
Mm.
I've never heard, and I hope she's still there, a load of Coswells in all my life.
Why'd you say that?
Well, these young children who go in cells just for a couple of hours to scare them. I can't go into names now, I think. When my daughter was 8 years of age, she found the box of matches, for instance, or she did find them, not for instance. And I took her to a police station because a neighbour told me she was lighting them in the street. She was put in a cell for 20 minutes just to scare her. My daughter now is a police officer, right? So don't tell me putting a child of 8 years of age away to scare them. I know it's just a little incident, but it does make
No, it's a fantastic incident. That's exactly the point I was making.
That makes a mark for the rest of the life.
Because you changed her life. You changed her life completely. Because all of a sudden she was told, you don't do that.
You don't do this, you don't do that. And when you've just gone along, you asked her the question, so rape doesn't go on in blah, blah.
Oh, she's living in cuckoo land. She's living down south, that's the problem.
Well, I don't know why it doesn't come another accent, but I don't know where she's from. Rape does go on with young children in
and bullying and beatings and torture. It all goes on.
So I'm going to go on her website and I'm going to send her a lovely long email. I don't know what planet she lives on because
I thought I handled that very well.
Well, I could see where your temper was just about to snap. I did listen to it. But this, you don't do this to children, you don't do that. I'm sorry. I was the one parent growing up with my daughter, and I've done a very good job, and I still believe it comes from parenthood. I was a one parent, and I was very hard on my daughter. Well, at the end of the day, I sit back and laugh now.
Well, do me a favour, when you send that long email, would you say you've just been on the show, and would you tell her that after the presenter, the steam was coming out the phones with anger and disappointment?
Oh, you don't hear it on your voice.
No, but the steam...
I've never met such a do-gooder, heard such a do-gooder who does nothing.
I'd be interested to know how much she gets paid for doing nothing.
I really don't wish to know. Has she got any children?
Don't know.
Well, I bet she hasn't.
Helen, put me in the email.
I will. Don't you worry, love.
Tell her, love.
This is Late Night City with Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
I'm not one to ring up things like this, Pete, to be perfectly honest with you. But I'm a servant police. I've got over 20 years service in the police. And I was just driving home from work, actually. And I've just listened to Rapunzel there.
The lovely lady.
Yeah, in her ivory tower.
Penelope Gibbs, who is from the Out of Trouble campaign.
As I said, Rapunzel. She's living in Cloud Cuckoo Land. She just isn't... Where she thinks she's coming from is beyond me. As I say, I'm not one to ring up shows like yourself. I listen to them occasionally, but it's just... I couldn't believe my ears with this... you know, this doesn't happen in prison and blah-de-blah and all the rest of it. And then what we should be doing is this and that and the other. You used a word when you were talking to her and you said feral. And the bottom line is, as a servant police officer on the streets, you know, that's what they are. And so a lady made a comment before about parenting and stuff like that. That's quite correct as well. But this idea of let's all be nice to them and let's all treat them really lovely and they won't do it again. And
they put the two fingers, of course, they're laughing the same. You know, because you're on the street. Listen, I bit my lip on that interview. I really held back because I was getting incensed.
Well, I can remember, Pete, that I'm in my service. Years ago, the court system was so restrictive because they used to fine the child, which how ridiculous is that? So the child couldn't pay it, so nothing happened, and everything else that goes with it. These days, at least the court system's a bit better. But if we went along the lines of what that female, that's the best I can give is advocating, then we may as well have anarchy because they will just carry on and they're absolutely laughing at the system even now. So they're going to, it will just turn into an absolute mockery. I'm trying, and colleagues, you know, serving police officers, are locking them up. And all right, you can blame the courts, you can do this, you can sue that. And I'm not saying we shouldn't just give up and walk away. But this idea of let's pat them on the head and say, now don't do that again, and they won't, is an absolute... she's living on another planet.
I couldn't agree with you more.
And you know, you said before, whether she's from down south or whatever, you know, I mean, I've worked in this area for 20 years, and it's just... You are wasting your time with stuff like that. And maybe I'm just dismissing it and sound very cynical, but the realities of it is, I mean, you know, as she walked the streets of, you know... of Bootle or wherever like that. Has she ever been out and seen what's going on and all the rest of it and try and speak to them? And the outreach workers that are going on trying to do a good job and stuff like that, and they have some success. But this idea of you commit crime and then we will go, now, what we're going to do with you is we're going to do this. The only good thing she said was the restorative justice, and that I've seen the effects of that, and sometimes it does work. Most of the time it doesn't, because... They go and say sorry to these poor people who they burgled or whatever, and they walk away, and it's like, so what? And I go to burglaries where old people have been burgled. You try telling me that these pieces of you-know-what are going to go, I won't do it again because you said, be nice. With like she's advocating.
Yeah, but all they'll say, Ray, is that she's an easy touch.
Exactly.
They
will laugh at it. It's as simple as that. I'm not trying to say we should bring in draconian ways where, you know, you beat them to death or anything like, for words, for want of a better phrase. You know, I'm not saying that. But this idea of, you know, just basically do nothing and they'll walk away. Yeah. And let's not put them in prison and let's not punish them. Unfortunately, the only language they understand is being punished, because they will just carry on doing it if you go along with what she said. Then they will just carry on doing it.
Yeah.
And like I say, I'm not normally a person who gets wound up by shows like, you know, and I listen to it and have a bit of a laugh and stuff like that. I was driving along and I was just like, I can't believe this.
Yeah,
and the first time I've ever phoned up a show like your own. Yeah. Because it was just absolute nonsense. The tail is wagging the dog. Yeah. If we went along with her, the tail would be wagging the dog even more. Because the poor people who are being burgled and by these scum, who then, nothing happens to them as far as she's concerned. Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's
Ray,
just a nonsense.
I've got to ask you two questions. If you can answer them, great. If you can't, don't worry about it. But I must. You and your colleagues, how do you feel as a working policeman when you see the unbelievable violence towards police in Ireland from young kids? And I mean, not just throwing rocks. These kids wanted to kill. How do you, as a serving policeman, and your mates feel about that? Your work colleagues?
Well, I suppose at best the word I could use at best is frustration. I mean, I'll go back to what I said before. I'm not advocating that we should be let off the leash and you can go and do what the hell you like, because obviously you've got to have rules and all the rest of it. And you know, I respect the system, and the Police and Criminal Evidence Act allows you to use reasonable force and stuff like that. But my God, when you see stuff like that, where one side, you know, as far as it appears, it's just being allowed to do what it likes, and the other side's got to stand there and just be nice about it. Mm. Are you talking about, I mean, I watched on the news that they're running jousting with scaffolding poles at the Lions of Bobby's?
It's the violence in it. The other question, because we're coming out of time, the other question I wanted to ask, and this has incensed me beyond belief, this ridiculous story about the Facebook and these comments about Moke making him out to be a hero is, if they actually dissected, it's probably all the no-marks that's ever had a problem with the police and thought, yes, I can have me say once and for all and put it on with everybody else. It's a slap in the face.
Well, absolutely. Well, you see, I mean, the problem is, you know, again, you know, if the police come out and have a go, the police will be criticised.
Oh, every time, you know, every time, every time.
And yet, you know, these people who are going on Facebook criticising the police, if something happens to them, who's the first people they phone? The police.
I'll leave it on that. Ray, thank you very much indeed.
The best of Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Not many people in this country that do the job I do, but there is a legend. A legend that works for Metro, and I mean a legend, and I can't believe I've got him on the line, let alone got him on my show. Hello, Alan Robson.
Hello, mate. Nice to talk to a fellow legend. We're a rare breed.
We are indeed. I believe when we die, they don't replace us. Right. You've had a hell of a time up there, haven't you, over
Absolutely.
This hostage, over this man who's been killed, over the man that's killed himself. Tell us all that's been going on your phone then.
Well, it's been a bit crazy, as you can imagine. The weirdest thing is that at the very beginning, when this all started, everybody was terrified, you know, so there's somebody going around just shooting people at random. And the horror was that we were going to end up with something that happened in the Northwest, you know, with the Cumbrian affair. Everybody was, oh, blimey, here's another one. And then we discovered it was to do with a bouncer who may or may not have been connected to other people, and maybe there were other folk helping him out. And finally, of course, everybody was stuck to their television screens. I don't know what it was like in your part of the world, but everybody here was up until this thing finished off the other night. About 90% of the population here in the Northeast are sensible enough to realise that this guy had to be stopped pretty much at all costs, because he'd completely lost it, and any semblance of order he had in his brain had kind of gone. But now we have this small percentage of people who believe the police are responsible because they are suggesting that by firing a taser at him while he's holding the trigger of a shotgun to his head was the thing that finished him off. You know, maybe they could have done it a different way. We don't know whether that happened, but that's the conjecture that people are coming up with.
Now, his brother has been on Sky and slagged the police off and slagged his mother off and blamed his mother, and he said that his mother has given him a death sentence.
Well, I've heard that also, and the bottom line is that if the family had wanted to have been there, they had something like 5, 6, 7, 8 hours to get there. They didn't get there. Well, one of his friends, a fellow bouncer, went up there, and even Gazza, who was a bit worse for wear, decided he wanted to go up there and offer him therapy, is what he said, and then take him fishing. So there was an awful lot going on, but essentially the police were watching to see what happened. We also know that some residents there, flats where snipers were housed, they had a clear sight of everything that went on there. So I don't think when this police inquiry, you know, the independent one, takes place, I think it has to be straight as an arrow because members of the public saw exactly what happened too. So there's not going to be any way that they can sidestep it. I've heard various rumours. I've heard rumours that maybe the lady in hospital might have a case against the police for not tipping her off that he was getting out and coming to. There's rumours abounding in all directions, and it's not going to go away anytime soon. The thing that truly sickened me was that people seem, this tiny percentage, and as I say, it's not the majority by any stretch, but that there is this small percentage of people who seem, you get the impression that they're those people that also have an axe to grind with the police. So maybe they're, you know, they're criminals themselves, or they have sympathies in that direction. They're trying to build this up to be the police have picked on this poor soul. And I got an email from a member of the family of the man that was killed. Nobody's talking about this guy. He was an innocent person in the middle of all this. He was not connected to anybody. He wasn't a member of the police. He's just been blown away. And I'm sorry, but my sympathies will always go with a victim. As soon as somebody picks up a gun, they've lost any sympathy that I have. But there's this hardcore, I'm afraid I have to put them in the nugget category, that quite frankly are not doing, certainly not going to do the police any favours. And it's a lunatic fringe that seem to be trying to turn this guy into some kind of romantic hero. I don't know how this person suddenly becomes a figure of sympathy when so many, anybody that saw the picture of the police officer in the newspaper spattered with blood, and all he was doing was having a look at some charts in his car while somebody walked up and stuck a gun through the window. How can you turn this nugget, this madman, into a figure of sympathy? And yes, if you go back to the very beginning of it, you know, this whole idea that, well, maybe he lost the love of his life. Hells bells, Pete, this happens every day, doesn't it? I mean, haven't we all gone through that? We don't end up blowing people away on the back of it. You have to take it on. You can't force somebody to love you. You pick yourself up, dust yourself off and start all over again. Fred Astaire taught us that.
Yeah, I'm talking to Alan Robson from Metro, and he's been right in the thick of it. The other thing is, Alan, that's really annoyed me, is the cost. This country has got an economic crisis on right now. We can't imagine what this has cost to bring those vehicles home from Ireland, manpower, double time, treble time. I can't imagine what it's cost.
It's crazy. We could have pretty much paid off the credit crunch for this, because everybody here in the Northeast can't understand why we have. How many police programs have you watched over the years where they've had a helicopter up there and they can pick up the heat of a human body from like 3 miles away and they send the people there, they get straight to them? We had a tornado up travelling at something like 300 miles an hour. What chance? What chance on this earth did they have of seeing anybody anywhere and knowing for certainty that was going to be the killer?
Is this going to be one of those stories that's going to run and run on your phone, in?
I think it's certainly gearing up that way. I mean, the bottom line is you have two camps. You have the vast majority who are just glad that it's over. Certainly the people in Rothbury, because a lot of the stories have been swallowed by the police. You haven't heard them. You know, the story of the woman who, the elderly woman that just walked into a living room to find him standing there. We're hearing other stories now of a man, woman with children who suddenly heard a noise upstairs and it was him. So I think the people of Rothbury, thank heavens, can start to get used to living that really quiet country life, because it is on in the back end of nowhere, Rothbury. It's a lovely place, but it's way out there, and hopefully they can start getting back to being that little anonymous place. I think everybody will now know of Rothbury, but they just want to get their lives back together again. I do think there's hardcore of people that seem to have an agenda of their own to try and slag the police off and try and put the police down, basically because they don't want the police chasing them, I think, in most cases. You've got this small hardcore of idiots that will do their absolute utmost to see that this keeps going. I have huge sympathy for friends of Raoul Mort and family. I have, you know, because I don't think anybody really wanted this guy to end his life. I think they wanted him to pay for what he did. And I have much greater sympathy for those people that have been shot and are trying to rebuild their health before they can start rebuilding their life, and of course the relatives of the deceased. I think it's a mess, it's a tragedy at every level, and frankly it actually sickens me to hear people saying, well, it was the police's fault. Well, it was the fault of the woman that was shot. Well, it was some people have even said it was the fault of the children for not loving. And you're thinking, are you mad?
Yeah. Tell
what
me,
planet are you on?
Have your hands been tied? Have you been under a news blackout?
Yeah. Yeah, and people were, because I'm probably like yourself, we pride ourselves on people being able to ring up and talk about anything.
Yeah.
So we've had to have the people that work for us saying that each person, tell them tonight you can't do it. But the reason was very simple. You know, Raoul Mort had heard what had been said on my show and had read and heard what had been happening on Sky and in the press, and said that if people misrepresented him, and let's face it, callers ring up just with an opinion,
yeah,
and some of that might be construed by him as misrepresentation, if he heard any more of that, he was going to start to kill civilians, you know, people that were not connected. And we certainly didn't want to be responsible for any of that.
Alan, you use a lovely word, nugget. What do you think about Gaza? Has he lost his way?
Well, it was one of our lads here at Metro that had to pay his taxi when he got up there. He was the first person that Gaza saw. He's a guy called Kenny who works for us. And he was up there basically getting us news clips and news bulletins. And he saw him get out the car. Gaza just seemed to think that because he was famous, he could just walk up to the police court and get through and have a chat with him. Well, he wasn't fully on his game. I think he maybe had him imbibed a little bit when he got there. He didn't have the money to get a taxi back, so a local photographer took him home. It was a mistake at every level because he was never going to, you know, end up getting through there. But Gaza actually does genuinely have a heart of gold. I know Paul very well, and he'll help anybody. He'll help any charity at any time. I think he'd had a few, switched the telly on, found out what was happening. He'd met the guy before, decided to go up there, see what he could do. But it was a mistake. I mean, when his agent heard about it, apparently he nearly had a heart attack.
Especially with the fishing rods.
Yeah, it was like, just put the tasers down, lads. We're going fishing. You know, it was never going to happen, was it? Really?
And the inquiry's going to cost a lot of money.
Oh, dear. I know, but as far as I can see, it needs to be cleared up precisely what happened. Fortunately, as I say, there are witnesses, so it should be relatively clear-cut. And the people who don't believe it will be the ones that have an agenda not to believe it. I think the vast majority of people here in the Northeast are just glad it's all over and done with and that nobody else is going to get hurt. I think that was the main thing from the vast majority of people. But as I say, you got this hardcore of police-hating people that are maybe on the other side of society that we prefer not to talk about but exist, and they want to keep this going.
Alan Robson from Metro, I can't tell you what a delight it was to have a legend on my programme.
Well, I'm very happy to speak to a legend from the other side of the country. Bless your heart, and you keep on keeping on, Pete.
Late Night City with Pete Price.
Yes, Jill.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Hi, Pete. I'm just wondering if you can give me any help or advice over benefits.
I'm not in a position to give you any advice over benefits, love.
Well, I just want to get my point off, to be honest. I suffer with mental health problems, anxiety and depression. I get a lot of help off the doctor. And I got caught with someone living with me. This person wasn't living with me because we were together. They were living with me for my health issues because I can't be on my own. So I'm under investigation with the income support, but I've got two young children. And since the 8th of June, I've had no benefits at all. I've been in touch with social services. The best they could do was to give me £20, which I got, so I'm guessing lucky with. And I've come to the point now where I've got nowhere to go, no one to help me. And I've got two young children. And I've got to the point now where I don't know where to go or who's there to help me. No one's helping me.
Have you spoke to I've forgotten what they're called.
Citizen's Advice.
Citizen's Advice.
I have, yeah. With me being under investigation, they're not liable to help me.
Then nobody can then.
But I've got, like, a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old at home. But I'm not getting any money, no income from my children.
Why not get a job?
Because I can't walk to the bottom of the street on my own without help.
In what way can't you walk to the bottom of the street?
Because I suffer with panic attacks. I just about got my front door on my own.
So who takes the children to school?
My friend picks them up at the bottom of the road when I send them out.
Who does the shopping for you?
Someone will pick me up and take me. I don't do nothing on my own.
And how old are you?
28.
Do you know why this and how long this has been happening?
No, my counsellors and the mental health team, like, they can't pinpoint it. Like, why I'm the way I am. Like, it's just me. I'm just...
Have you always been this way?
Well, 6 years ago, I was, like, housebound. I couldn't go up my front door for 2 years. And then I finally got, like, the bottom of the road, top of the road, got the kids.
Why were you housebound?
Because I suffered with panic attacks so bad, I just...
So, did you used to take drugs? Is that what brought it on?
No, I don't take drugs. I don't believe in drugs.
So what brought on the... I'm trying to find out what happened when it happened.
I know, like, my counsellors and, like, people who speak to me, like, the mental health team, that's what they try and get out of me, but I can't give an explanation the way I am. I'm just the way I am.
But you must know when it happened. There must be a time. Have you always, from the day you've been born, had panic attacks?
No, the worst time was my little boy was 2, right. And I went shopping. I didn't know it was a panic attack at the time, but I just ran away from the situation I was in and left my little boy in the middle of the village where I was and got in my taxi. And as he went to drive away, I was like, oh, stop, stop. When I got my little boy, got in the taxi, and this taxi driver couldn't even drive me all the way home. He got me halfway. He had to get out and help get in the back and try and calm me down. Since that day, I've been the way I am. I suffer with panic attacks and anxiety and depression, and I always have to have someone near me and around me.
So what about the father of your children?
Sorry?
What about the father of your children?
I've got no contact with them.
Oh, so you did go out and meet somebody else?
Yeah, but as I say, I've not always been like this. It's 6 years ago when I finally kicked in, type of thing. I left school, went to the army, left the army, come home, and then this is how I've ended up.
And the psychiatrist or the mental health workers can't find out what's causing this?
That's all they keep trying to get out of me. But, like, to go, my counsellor's gone back to my past life and I've never had a bad life. You know, I've had a mum and dad there. I've got 7 brothers and sisters. you know, everyone's moved on and stuff, and I'm still here, like, nowhere to go, nothing to do. Like, feel like I've got no one to help me.
What, you've got seven brothers and sisters?
Yeah.
None of them help you?
No, because what way can they help me?
They're your brothers and sisters, that's what family do. Help each other.
Well, obviously my family doesn't. I've got, you know...
Have you got your mum and dad?
Yeah, I'm going to be homeless in 4 weeks.
So you got you got your mum and dad and seven brothers and sisters, and none of your family are helping you at all.
No.
Not your mum and dad.
Well, I'm going to be homeless in 4 weeks, and they won't put me up.
So there's more issues at stake. Then there's more to this story for your mum and dad not to take you in with two children.
They've brought all the kids up and stuff. They say they can't handle it anymore. They want. You know, they've brought us all up and we've got to live our lives now.
Would they take the children in?
No. No. You know, once a person who is willing to take me in, she's got a one-bedroom flat with her own little boy and she's willing to take me in with my two kids, but my family aren't. The way I see it is everyone's got their own life. I just need to know who to go and see and what to do.
Well, if you're under investigation and, as you say, citizens' advice said they can't help you, I don't know where you go from there.
But, that you know, see, you're just saying the same thing. I'm not blaming you.
No, I'm saying the same thing because, first of all, I'm not an expert. I find it baffling to think you've got seven brothers and sisters and a mum and dad and nobody wants to help you and they're going to see you out in the streets. I find there must be more history to the whole story. You must have done something to your mum and dad too.
Yes, no, I'm just a single parent.
Well, surely they would take their grandchildren in.
But they can't. They're 70 years of age. They're not in a position where they can't take them in.
Well, where did all the seven brothers and sisters sleep?
Well, that's probably why they had a hard time years ago. And they
so they would see their grandchildren on the streets rather than take them in?
Well, the position I'm in now, yeah. They're not taking me in. But that's not the point I'm making.
That is the point. Of course that's the point you're making. That's what family are for. Why should the state help you?
Well, shouldn't he, me as a single mum, shouldn't he?
Oh, is that the get-out clause? You're a single mum, so we automatically... Everybody should help you.
Well, now, if I was in the position to go and get a job, I would. I can't even go to the bottom of the road to get shopping.
Well, so why aren't the two men who had you two had two babies too, why are they not helping you? Why are they not giving you financial support for their children?
Because they're not in my life.
But they're the fathers of your children.
But...
Isn't that what fathers do? Put money on the table for their children.
Well, nowadays, nobody don't, as far as I'm concerned. They all just leave you to do what you can on your own. And that's how I've been left. I've done a course in college and I've just passed it. But I'm not in the position to go and get a job because
I've got to ask you, how did you do a course in college when you can't go out and you have panic attacks?
Because it's at the top of my road.
Oh, so you can walk to the top of your road to get to college?
Because I get my kids to school just before the college, yeah.
Right.
All I'm asking is, Pete, no one is helping me out. I've had no money for 6 weeks. I've literally come to a standstill now. A friend who's just put a lot of food in my freezer and my cupboards for me. Mm-hmm. But she's a single parent herself with three kids. You know, she can't help me out all the time. If I was in the position to go and get a job tomorrow... I would. I wish I could. I've got qualifications there to do it. That is what my aim is, to do that. But I can't do that at the minute. All I want to know is there anyone you can advise me to speak to?
Not if citizen advice can't help you.
Okay, then.
All right, Joe. Sorry I can't be any more helpful.
Late Night City with Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Hello, Wynne.
Hello.
Hi.
Your opening remarks tonight just absolutely filled me with hope. It's time somebody said what you said about the Moat case. I'm so sick of it, like a lot of my friends are. you hear all how awful it is, as you say, he's become a hero. It's ridiculous.
But he's become a hero to the wrong type of people, and that's what's scary. That's what's scary.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more.
Mm. I mean, I've got an email here where Stephen says, don't get wound up, mate. All this support for Moat is a joke. He killed and wounded people. What about supporting for the Bobbies that work hard and had to deal with it? Now, they have to be investigated. They have all the stress now of the investigation. The man was a risk. The girl he shot was allegedly told to move and refused. You know, but the people who are supporting him are just an awful lot of them are not nice people.
Absolutely. The other thing is, how is it that he was let out of jail in that mood and had a gun? You know, he came out of jail in that with the determination to do something, didn't he?
Yeah, but you see, they're now saying that they should have been warned about that. But how many people leave jail and say, I'm going to get him, I'm going to get him? So what do the police, and what are everybody supposed to do about this?
Well, exactly. Yeah. Not let them out.
Oh, when it's wound me up so much.
Yeah,
and
me too.
Hear these reports, I think, what the hell is going on in this world?
Don't know at all.
Well, thank you for that, Wynne.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Hello, Andrea.
Can you just slow down a little bit? What it was, like, it wasn't over that man. It wasn't over that man at all. It was over the lady. It was over the lady who had panic attacks.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I wanted to speak to Pete Price.
You're speaking to me. Andrea, you're speaking to me.
Am I on the radio now?
Yes, you are indeed.
Am I on the radio now?
Yes, Andrea, you're on.
Right, all I can say to that lady, right, if she still listens to the radio, is I know exactly what she's going through at all with the panic attacks and everything like that, right? So I've gone through the same thing myself.
Mm-hmm.
I've had an abusive husband. I've lost my home, I've lost my child, my 13-year-old little girl, and I don't work because I'm disabled and everything like that.
Right.
Please don't tell me I'm on the radio.
You said I want to go on the radio. You're on the radio.
I'm not now, am I?
Andrea, what do you think I'm doing if you're not talking to me on the radio?
Well, all I'm saying to you is can I just give a little message to this lady, right?
Yeah, sure.
Is what you need to do is take deep breaths and she needs to think about what she's doing before she goes out and do her best for the children.
Right.
Because I lost my home. I lost my home because I had an alcoholic husband and I had a 3-bedroomed house. I mean, my home was absolutely beautiful. And my little girl, she's 13 and I could go into a few things, but I can't. Mm-hmm. Not over the radio and that. And I haven't had it now for 11 months. And I'm just absolutely devastated.
The best of Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.